Good evening. This is the HIV Hour on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area, .com online. You can find us online, thehivhour.org.uk. We are sponsored by Jack Russell Technologies. So this week we are celebrating International Women's Day, which is on the 8th of March. We're celebrating all women living with HIV and women in HIV medicine. We have got some amazing interviews for you today. So it's all about women. It's all about celebrating all of our women, whether that's in Brighton and Hove, all around the UK, or even globally. In 2002, 36.4% of all new HIV diagnoses were in women. It comes that a third of all people living with HIV in the UK are women. And if we look at that globally, 52% of people living with HIV are women. Women are often underrepresented in research and services. And I know we have a lot of followers in the US. And did you know that of all the people living with HIV in the United States, a third of that are women? Living with HIV, women are mothers, caretakers, spouses, employers, friends and neighbours, often all at once. HIV as a woman means dealing with the virus while still fulfilling the other roles. But by taking care of your health and taking HIV medication, you can live a long and healthy life. We're going to go on to our first interview by the amazing Professor Yvonne Gillies. Amazing interview. Please listen.
Radio Reverb.
We're celebrating on the HIV Hour for the very first time some of the most amazing women in the UK. Women living with HIV and women in medicine. And we have the absolute pleasure to have on the show, the HIV Hour, Professor Yvonne Gillies. Now, Yvonne, have I said your name correctly? Because I have been practicing.
You have. It was absolutely perfect, Sue. Great now, start. Brilliant.
Now, let me just read a couple of allocate. I've done some, obviously. I wanted to get a bit more information and so many accolades. Honorary clinician, professor and consultant in HIV medicine and sexual health at Brighton and Sussex Med School and University Hospital. Chair of Beaver 2023. Beaver trustee, specialises in HIV in women. Past chair of Beaver Pregnancy Gander. It just goes on. It just goes on. And the first question I would like to ask you, Yvonne, we would like to get to know the women behind this. What, you know, I mean, you've got so many accolades in your portfolio on what you do and what you've done, but I would love to ask you, what drove you to some of those amazing things you do and are still doing?
I mean, I guess, first of all, I probably have to start with my mum, who unfortunately isn't with us any longer. But my mum was a single mother. My father died when I was very young, and she raised four girls and a boy. And she raised us to absolutely always try and do our best, and kind of really instilled in us a sense of, yeah, just try and do what you can in the world, but you can do anything you want to do. And that was really the key. And she was never at university herself, but all of her children who chose to go to university went. That was four out of five of us. And so I guess then moving on, the other great women are my sisters, but also the women I work with. And that really starts with the women living with HIV, because Brighton, our clinic has quite a large male population living with HIV, but we have a smaller but brilliant group of women. And it was really key for me that those women, although they were in a minority, couldn't therefore be exposed to anything but better care, because it was really important to make sure, even though we're a smaller group who maybe were kind of less represented in public fora, we had to make sure that actually this group of women got the best care. And so we started the women's clinic. And so that was myself, also our nursing team. So Gladys Mundoa, who is still with us, she's Gladys Maspina now, and also Becky Murdoch. And so we started our women's clinic, but we asked the women, first of all, what do they want from a clinic? Mm-hmm. And did they want a clinic at all? Because yeah. You know, you have to ask women what they want. Otherwise, you can't just serve them up anything. So it's really important that actually women had a say in what they wanted. And that's what we tried to provide, was something that was useful to women and could provide the needs that they felt they had, as well as the needs that we felt that they had. So that was probably at the starting point. But I also work with brilliant female colleagues, and that's junior doctors. So coming in at F1 level, right through to fellow consultant colleagues and our nursing staff as well. Again, junior nursing team members, through to clinical nurse specialists and matrons and nurse consultants. We have Eileen Nixon, our nurse consultant.
Yes.
So I'm very lucky to be surrounded by fantastic women.
I mean, what also has inspired you? I mean, you're doing some amazing things, and as a woman myself, living with HIV for nearly 20 years, I can only take a massive hat off to you, because you know I am here because of you and all your amazing colleagues. But you know, I remember being diagnosed 20 years ago and coming into Brighton and not seeing much about like women's groups or anything like that. And I did, as a woman living with HIV, Yvonne, feel incredibly isolated. And I'm quite a strong woman, but felt isolated. So, you know, what else has inspired you?
I mean, I think when we did the women's survey to try and inform the clinic, I think it became really obvious, and we didn't realise it at all, because the Lawson unit is quite a caring HIV unit and has a really great atmosphere. From the minute you walk in the door, you get a friendly welcome. But women coming to our clinic in quite a male-dominated environment felt very isolated, exactly as you said, but also vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because they didn't have other women there that they could talk with or be with. And they felt that it just wasn't necessarily a space that they felt comfortable coming to or bringing their children with them. And we really were surprised at that, because we felt at the Lawson unit we were very open and friendly, but it wasn't the women's experience. And that was really important to change, to focus it in a time when women could have that safe space and it wasn't a busy other time for the clinic with kind of normal clinics. We tried to make it a time where it would be dedicated to women. And now with the bigger space that we have in our bigger unit, we have a dedicated waiting area. You know, we have four clinical rooms that are right beside each other in a dedicated space with some waiting chairs for women, but also lots of different spaces which are much more private in our general Lawson unit waiting room. And I think as well, because we work really closely with the Sussex Beacon, we have had that ability to be able to develop the whole peer mentoring angle, which I think is incredibly important for women, particularly.
Absolutely.
Because as you say, Sue, if you're feeling isolated, it's all very well somebody who's from, you know, a medical background talking to you about HIV, but nothing beats empathy. It really does. Somebody who has that lived experience, there are things you don't have to explain. And we learned that from working with the Beacon, and the women going to the Beacon's group told us that. So we were able to bring the Beacon into clinic. Mm-hmm. So that the Beacon came to the women, and then they could go up to the Beacon or have peer mentors to be able to kind of expand their world and their experience. And that kind of camaraderie and Lunch Positive have also been really, really proactive in increasing the reach to women, because I think we are now a women's service. People come to us now to approach women and provide things, especially for women. But it took time to really start. But once it started, then we found that actually there are lots of women who want the service, women who want to be involved with the service and peer mentoring, but also lots of other voluntary organisations, THT as well, the Beacon Lunch Positive, but many others who want to work with us to try and improve things for women, not only from a medical point of view, but just from that other really important community point of view that we in the medicine trade can't necessarily provide.
You must have seen some amazing changes over the years. If we look back, if you reflect back, and I mean, with the medication, I'm still wanting to go on the injectables, but I'm still waiting for them to change the type of medication I have so I can have the injectables. I mean, you know, would you have ever thought injectables every 2 months then going on further? Would you have ever imagined that?
No, not at all. And I had to reflect on this because I had my inaugural professorial lecture last October. And I kind of looked back at my time and when I came in to HIV, and I'd originally wanted to do liver hepatology as a specialty, but I did an a ward job for 6 months in HIV and just was completely bowled over by, I loved the patients, I loved the staff. I just really liked the holistic approach. But we were very much caring for people who were living very short lives and dying with HIV in our care. And then suddenly we got the new treatment a couple of years later, which absolutely revolutionized things. And I think it's just been incredible to see the change from trying to help people survive to now live well with HIV into the point where we are now at the preventative stage. We're trying to prevent frailty, heart disease, bone disease. So it's very much about keeping people living well into their longevity of their normal life expectancy. And when I started, that wasn't something I saw. And I think that's what's wonderful is that not only are the people, like the patients that we work with, incredible and active and motivated and demanding. They want change. They want an improvement. Yep. But we have also worked over many years with them to try and find that. And actually, we have achieved that, which not all medical specialties do. And there's always work to do. We can always do better. But I think that's been incredible to see that journey of us with people living with HIV and moving forward in that way.
And just going back to Brighton, I mean, we've got the test, you know, the vending machines in Brighton. We've got innovation seems to be higher in Brighton. Am I right on saying that? Because I'm always selling that to everybody, you know, when I do my talks and speeches and things. You know, Brighton is up there. Am I right? Tell me if I'm right.
Well, you are right. I mean, I think, you know, it really started when, you know, a lot of us have come from London, and it was Martin Fisher who really put Brighton as an HIV centre on the map. And a lot of us came because we wanted to work with Martin, and we wanted to do what he was doing and work with him to try and, you know, help improve the lives of people living with HIV. And when I'm chairing my, you know, as chair of BIVA, when I'm talking about various innovations, etc., I think people get a little bit sick of me hearing, well, in Brighton, we do this, because actually the reality is we have a group of people who are not willing to sit still. We always want to innovate, move things forward. We're very well supported by, you know, our community as well, both our community sector organisations, but also the HIV community in trying to improve things. So if there is a better way to do things, we will always try and find it. And it's often, you know, from our nursing staff or somebody who's seeing things day to day or someone living with HIV that we start to think about things differently. And I agree, we are innovators, we are modernisers. And we're not afraid of change, because actually our whole specialty is about change and always has been. And that's been the great thing about it, is it has been about change from day one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel really proud that I'm okay. A lot part of my work is London, but I live just outside of Brighton. But I feel when I look at the things that have happened over the years, I feel empowered myself to know I'm in a space where, you know, things are happening, maybe sometimes for the first time in Brighton and Hove. So I just really wanted to get your reflection on that. Yvonne, I want to ask you a question. I mean, I know we're still fighting for PrEP for women. Mm. So, you know, what's going on with PrEP for women? You know, from when it first came out, it was for gay men and it worked incredibly well. We're trying, and tell us what's going on now with PrEP for women.
I mean, so there's lots of really exciting developments for PrEP in women. So tablet PrEP should work for women as well. There's no reason why it won't medically. Men can take it every day or around the time they have sex. For women, there is a difference. They can only take it every day. So that's one thing. The second thing is women are different to men. And I think it's really important to remember that women have different other social pressures. that can potentially impair their ability to take those tablets, whether they work or not. The fact is, they may not be able to take them. Why? Because women are often unable to negotiate safe sex. Having tablets in the house can be dangerous for them and can increase their risk of violence. That can be from a partner or from anybody who discovers them and thinks that they might have HIV. You know, women with HIV live with that fear of violence more than women without HIV. They may be, you know, financially dependent on somebody else. So they might not be able to hide the pills or even take the pills. They may be told not to take them. But they also may have other dependents, so children or people that they're caring for, which may impede their ability to take tablets in the way they should be taking them because there's other priorities. Women often prioritize other people's health ahead of theirs. And we know that women are at higher risk of acquiring HIV just because vaginal sex, there's a bigger area of mucosa, which is the skin in the vagina, exposed potentially to HIV than there might be in the rectum in men. And also, we know that women who acquire HIV can have HIV-related illness and disease at when their immune system isn't as affected as men's are. And so we know globally women are at highest risk of HIV. And actually, it's women aged 15 to 24. And they get HIV twice as likely as men, but also 5 to 7 years earlier. So PrEP is really important. And I'm glad you brought it up, Sue, because the tablets are there. But now what we tried other things, because actually when you've done the studies on men, you see it works really well. You do the studies in women, it's not working. In fact, they're stopped early. And the reality is because women aren't able to take the tablets. And that's because of all those things I've just talked about. So if you think about other forms of PrEP, well, there's rings. They don't work particularly well either. So they're rings that women put in their vaginas with HIV drugs kind of on them that release slowly.
Like a placebo or something, is it?
It's a bit like a pessary for
Right,
contraception,
okay.
not a pessary, a contraception ring, except instead of contraception on it, it's got a HIV drug on it and it gets released slowly into the vagina. But again, the study has been really disappointing. They've tried tenofovir gel to see if putting that into the vagina directly is more protective. Again, that hasn't worked very well, often because women can't use it because men know they're using it and they're trying to protect themselves. And they're either perceived to be women who are sleeping with lots of different men, or they are accusing the men of potentially being a risk for HIV. So again, there's that risk of violence and they can't conceal that. So the newest thing are injectables.
You've took the words out of my mouth because
And I
Scotland
know
has
you love
just been released
injectables.
in Scotland, haven't they?
No, absolutely. And I mean, I'm so delighted for Scotland that they've managed to get them. It's really brilliant because I think injectables won't be needed for everybody and they're not necessary for everybody because they are very expensive. Let's be honest, there's a lot of health requirements out there from the NHS and we understand that. But for some people, they are crucial. And that is because they can't take tablets, use rings or gels at home because of the risk of violence. Therefore, an injectable going to a clinic every 2 months with one of the injectables called cabotegravir, or every 6 months for another one called lenacapavir. How many flu vaccines do people, COVID vaccines, get a year? Often two. The same thing could prevent HIV, and it's been really, really acceptable to women, and it works. And even when you compare it to the tablets, it's working better because women are able to go to the clinic. They don't have to keep anything at home. Nobody knows that they're using anti-HIV medication to stop them getting HIV. It's completely private. And that is really, really the key. So for me, injectables are absolutely crucial for women. But for all of this to work, women have to know about PrEP. And this is the difficulty, is that women either have no idea, but nobody asks them. They don't talk to them about sex. They don't think, could you be at risk of HIV? and give them the information to inform themselves as to whether or not they may be at risk. Because they might think they aren't, but that's because nobody has explained to them what a risk might be. Yeah. So that information and education for women really is lacking. And this is where we have to improve things, is the information and therefore the access of PrEP for women, and making it more ubiquitous and not something that women have to think of as seeking, a bit like contraception in the old days. It was all about, oh, contraception will encourage promiscuity amongst women. You know, it is just women are judged always, and women need to have the same access as men. Absolutely. And therefore that discussion needs to happen.
Beaver in Brighton, 23rd of April. Has it been in Brighton before?
So we haven't had Beaver in Brighton since 2015, which is the year we lost Martin Fisher.
Yes.
So it will be, and we had it in 2006 before that. So it'll be the third time for it to come to Brighton. But I really wanted to be a celebration of all things HIV, and also all of the, you know, progress and change that all of the individuals living with HIV in the UK, but also I think Brighton as well. I think it's really important that we have that celebration in Brighton.
Absolutely.
Because 2025 is a big year. We had our first World AIDS Day celebration since 2007 in Downing Street last November. Mm-hmm. We've had Keir Starmer doing an HIV test online, you know, on camera. We have a government who are alive to HIV and want to work with us. And given what's happening globally with HIV, we need a leader for this. And I think Brighton is the perfect place for us to showcase what can happen in the UK with the community and with HIV healthcare providers and academics working together. And we can show really the whole nation and globe, the whole globe, the progress that we are making.
Brilliant. You have chosen a song, haven't you?
So as well as all the amazing women living with HIV who I have met in my time, but also the amazing women I haven't yet met, I would like to dedicate a song, but I would also like to include my daughter, who is an incredible young woman who is ready to grasp what life is giving her. And I'm delighted to have such a wonderful daughter. So my song will be Woman by John Lennon. I share a birthday with him. So, and the last time I played a request on the radio, my mum played it for my birthday, and it was a John Lennon song. So for all you amazing women out there, here is John Lennon.
Thank you so much, Yvonne. I will see you at Beaver in Brighton on the 23rd.
Fabulous.
Yes, we'll see you then. Thank you so
much.
Lovely to
make sure you find me, because I'd be running around.
I will. I will.
But please just track me down.
Thank you. Wow, what an amazing song that was by John Lennon, one of my all-time favourites, and really fitted in with what we are celebrating this evening and this week, International Women's Day. Thank you, Yvonne, for sharing some of your wisdom, knowledge and your experience, and I'm sure we'll have you back on the show again. We have now another amazing woman who is living with HIV. Her name is Mina. I took the time out to do an amazing interview with her, and she tells us why International Women's Day is so important to her. Hi, if you've just joined us, this is the HIVR on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM in the Brighton area and .com online, and you can always get us on our famous podcast. As mentioned just previously, we are celebrating International Women's Day. We are celebrating women living with HIV and celebrating women in HIV medicine. And we're so proud to have on the show today, Mina, and we're going to introduce her in a second. We're going to be talking about Why do we celebrate International Women's Day? Why do you think we need to? Why, you know, this is an all-women show. There's no chaps on board on this session. It's the first time the HIV Hour has ever done this. So, Mina, welcome to the HIV Hour.
Hello, Sue. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really excited about this conversation. So, yeah. And
brilliant.
It's been nice to be part of International Women's Day. And thank you for inviting me over.
Absolutely. So just a quick question, really. What does International Women's Day mean? Had you heard of International Women's Day? Have you supported? Have you celebrated it before? What is it to you?
It's funny, I haven't formally celebrated it, actually, but I have heard of it. And I think it was interesting, you know, when you were asking me to go on this, you know, to have this conversation with ourselves. I actually looked up what the theme for International Women's Day was for this year. And it was all about full gender parity.
Yes.
That's quite interesting, actually. And I thought, what does that mean for me and for women? And I think for me, it really means about self-empowerment.
Yes.
Because I think that in order to have gender parity, we have to have our own sense of self-empowerment, which is really about knowing our own value and worth, but also being able to make the changes, making changes that that are positive for ourselves,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I think it's also about you know, making those positive choices for ourselves, but making choices, you know, to take charge of our lives as well, I think, for sure. And I think that often society tells us what it means to be a woman. We're defined mm-hmm. by the external, outside, cultural, religious, social, cultural, you know, to be, we're kind of put in boxes of how we should
mm-hmm.
be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, International Women's Day is about celebrating our uniqueness of who we really are and our individuality,
mm-hmm.
and not putting ourselves in boxes or how society wants us to be. So I think it's about celebrating for us to be ourselves, to be
mm-hmm.
you, you know, to celebrate who you are, your authentic self. That's what it means to be. And I think my journey of HIV is discovering that about myself.
Mm-hmm. You've just jumped on it. So your journey with HIV, Mina, your journey with HIV, tell us.
Well, I'm 55 now. I had bangs done for the first time, fringe, and you know, I absolutely love it. It's taken years off me, but sorry you can't see that in the radio. But because I was diagnosed 21 years ago, it's going to be 22 years in June in 2003. I was very late diagnosed. I had a CD4 count of 11. So I had sort of the classic AIDS symptoms at that point.
Wow.
So I had lesions, I had oral thrush, and I didn't know I had it because I was misdiagnosed within primary care. And anyway, I was eventually asked to go for stem cell research. So I had to go and do a STI test, and that's how they discovered that I was like HIV positive. And in those days, you had to get a week.
To get tested. Yeah.
It was a shock to me, you know, as a straight HIV woman,
mm-hmm.
I mean, as a straight woman, South Asian woman living with HIV,
yeah.
at that point, I was like, hang on, how did I get that, you know? And
yeah.
it was a shock, it was traumatic, and I was quite ill because I lost a lot of weight. And then I got a pneumonia from it after that. So, because when I started my treatment, so I was in hospital for about 3 months. At the time of my diagnosis, I was with a partner, and luckily he didn't get it, which was great. And so that was a relief. But I think it had a physical and a psychological toll on me because, you know, all the stuff that comes with HIV, even though I was diagnosed and they said, you're not going to die, you're on treatment, you're going to be fine. I think you become numb, you kind of lose yourself.
Yes.
And I think for me, it was like, hang on a minute, I was Nina once. Now I'm Nina with HIV, and what does that mean? And so it was a level of shock, a level of trauma. And it was like, because physically I had to get well as well. And there were also,
mm-hmm.
obviously I was hospitalized. Then I shared it with my family, my siblings, not to my parents at that point. We
right.
just said, because I think we wanted to, because I think I was so ill at the time. And you know, so it got to a point where I was able to say I had pneumonia, but my siblings were great about it. Actually, I couldn't thank much, you know, my parents, my family, in terms of my siblings, and my friends were amazing, actually. So, you know, I think that's, you know, you need to know where your support is. And, you know, and that was really important to me as well. But I think the recovery is your own. I think in terms of your own journey, it's a mental and
yes.
a physical one and a psychological one, in the sense that, you know, like anyone who gets diagnosed with HIV, you know, it's always a shock. And you think, hang on, how come it happened to me? And why did it happen to me?
Yeah, why me? It's that question. And I really sit with you on that. You know, why me?
Yeah.
How's this happened? I didn't think I could get this. What
yeah.
has happened? What have I done wrong?
Yeah.
Did you question yourself? I know I did.
The funny thing is, I'm not Not that I, you know, I wasn't kind of sleeping around anyway. No. But not that. And so what if you do? It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But I think it was more about the fact that it was just a shock, because I kind of know about HIV, but you don't really know about it until you get it. And then, you know, I was kind of in, I think, you know, what happened to me afterwards was when I kind of came out of hospital, I was in kind of denial, I think, for a little while. I think you go through a bereavement process with HIV, and I think we forget that, because we still got to remember it's still a life-threatening condition, you know, but it's a life, can be potentially a life-limiting condition. But
yes,
now,
of untreated and undiagnosed, absolutely, yeah.
You know, so there's still that term of questioning your own mortality and about, oh my God, you know, because there's no cure still. And I think we sometimes forget that, you know, in whilst treatment is fantastic, I think there's still a psychological and a social impact and a cultural impact it can have on an individual, depending on your own point of reference of where you're coming from and who you are. You know, and I think and for me as a woman, I think, you know, it's about, you know, it was a shock. And I think for me, I had to go through some psychological support, and I had access counseling in my clinic,
yes,
which was
good.
But I did that after 2 years because I thought I was in denial. I'm all right.
I look all right. People think I'm all right, so I must be all
right.
Well,
I think, but I wasn't, because I was crying all the time, thinking, why am I crying? And then I think I had about 3 counseling sessions, and it really helped me to, have that space that I needed just to validate my emotions of what I was feeling, you know. And it was a journey of from trauma to transformation for me, I think, because it really helped me think about who I am, why am I here, what's it all about. And, you know, I don't usually talk about this, but I did have a spiritual experience while I was in hospital, because I asked the universe, source or God, whatever you want to believe in, you know, and I thought to myself, well, give me a sign you're with me. And I just felt like this, I woke up early in the morning, I just felt like somebody was holding me.
Wow.
And I've had some interesting esoteric, mystical experiences in my life since then. It's opened up the world in a way, because I've always been a mystical seeker, a spiritual seeker.
Right.
So kind of, and that's my perspective, you know, everybody has a perspective. But I think it really opened up about, there's more to me than just the physicality of who I am.
Yes.
And I think it was a journey of transformation into personal growth about living with HIV. And it's always became a journey of, it's been my gift now. I know it sounds weird, but I think maybe you might have heard that from Mother Sue.
Yes.
But I think I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for my HIV, because I am more empowered than I've ever been, you know, and more kind of very in the present, and discovered my own sort of journey of my own self-worth and value. Because I think, you know what it's like living with HIV, we still have those old narratives of, you know, the old stories of HIV, that, you know, you're infectious, you know, you are, you know, all the misconceptions about passing it on to others. And we know today, with U equals U, undetectable means untransmittable.
Exactly.
I would say that again to remind people
that
anyone, including women living with HIV, if you're on treatment, if your viral load is undetectable, you are not able to transmit it to other people. And I think that message is so important to maybe those who are not living with HIV, who are maybe listening to this as well. And that's quite empowering for us as people living and women living with HIV, because I think it is a real game changer.
If you think about the stats, I mean, there are more women living with HIV globally, 52% roundabout of all women, of all people, you know, women living with HIV, you know, talking about, we've got around about 40 million people, 52% of that is women. So we outrank men on living with HIV. Yeah. And these are the stats that some people don't get.
Yeah. And also the stats in the UK, where there are now women acquiring new HIV who are women over 50.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And we can debate why that is, because maybe women want to be sexually emancipated, you know, they can hook up on apps, which is their own prerogative. People are thinking, actually, I want to live my life and express myself. But I think sometimes it's about taking that responsibility. But you know, you may take responsibility, but we're all going to have unprotected sex, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But we have to make sure that we regularly, and I think we have to, I think the biggest taboo we have now is, you know, we start to talk about mental health now, it's becoming normalized. But the last taboo of humanity, I think, is sexual health, actually, and sexual well-being, and what that means, and sexual empowerment for women.
Uh-huh.
We talk about Me Too movement, we talk about HIV, but I think it's all about, for me, I think what's interesting about HIV, though, is it's something that we can't just shout about. Like if you have cancer or diabetes or any long-term condition, I don't know, because of it, because of the fact it's an STI.
Yes.
The society and the legacy of the
sport. It's sex. It's sex. We still don't talk enough about it. We do a lot of it, don't we? Nationally, globally, but we're still not talking enough about, oh no, don't talk about
but
that.
Also about what we like and what we
don't. I know.
And about female masturbation, I'll talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, female, sexual pleasure. I mean, for goodness sake, you know.
Yeah. And I think it's a journey of, you know, for me, HIV has been a journey of rediscovering all of those aspects of myself, you know. And for me, I think, you know, for me, it's also been about how do we, as a woman, as women, we need to empower ourselves. And for me, it's also about self-acceptance, that I had to come to terms with it actually and say, okay, there was Mina, then there was Mina living with HIV. Yeah. Now I'm Mina again. And actually, you know, after 20 years of living with it, I'm at a journey where I accept it and it doesn't define me like it used to anymore. It's only a small part of me now, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that's really important because it doesn't define me. It's part of me. I'm not rejecting it because I can't reject it, because I've got to embrace it and integrate it. So it's that idea of, for me, it's been a journey of emotional journey of separation and loss of myself to integration and expansion of myself or who I really am. And and in a way, it's given me that growth to have my own self-empowerment, not to be, because, you know, the outside world can judge us. And I think, you know, I remember when I went on my first date, after, you know, after 5 years of being diagnosed, I had that internal stigma of the fear of being rejected or fear of not accepted. And you know what? I held those stigmas because when I'm on a date with somebody, I met this guy in the club. It was great. I yanked his chain. It was quite funny. He's had a funny thing. And I didn't know what he looked like. And anyway, we had a real great chemistry. And I want to tell the story because I think it reminded me that when I told him on my second date, he was like, it's no big deal for him.
Wow.
So I was holding the stigma, not him.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, and he was like, oh my God. So, you know, and I think we have to recognize that sometimes we hold those old limiting belief systems about ourselves, because stigma is that internalized fear that we have of ourselves or the outside world have. So that, you know, it's based on negative beliefs and attitudes. And I think we have to move away that I'm just me. I can't pass it on. I'm just this normal person living my life, thriving and getting on with it. And it is a journey. But I think I found that living with HIV. I had to really own that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
No, I had to really own that. I love me. And, you know, I think I've said this before, but for me, my journey of HIV was a love affair with myself. I had to learn to love me.
Anyway. Self-discovery, a rediscovery, isn't it? But that's I really resonate.
But it's embracing all of you, you know, unapologetically, because and also it's about not comparing myself with anybody else. It's about embracing who I am. So and when I mean a love affair with myself, I really mean that I had to love me, warts and all, to say it's all right. You're imperfectly perfect. You're imperfectly perfect.
And it stops saying sorry. Stop. I used to say apologize and I made a pact with myself years ago. I'm going to stop apologizing because this is who I am. This is who I've become, stronger and more powerful. And I'm not going to apologize for that. Would you say not?
I mean, I think, why do we talk to apologize for who we are? Aren't we? You know, and I think that, you know, what HIV has taught me, it's just to be your authentic self. And what does that mean? It means having the permission to know yourself, that, you know, you are worthy, that you are heard, and that you have you are belonged. You do belong in this world. You do, you have the right to be who you want to be. And that's been a real journey for me, to be unapologetically me. Yeah. And, you know, I've been, you know, indirectly being sort of, not criticized, but judged, you know, because it's about that self-judgment you have of yourself, or others think, why are you different? Why you need to conform to what it means to be a woman, you know? Yeah. What does it mean to be a woman? I think to be a woman, you just got to be you.
Yeah.
Be you, do you, and just celebrate you and express yourself the way you want to express yourself. And if you don't know, just do things that you enjoy and you'll discover yourself from things that, you know, sometimes we don't give ourselves permission to give joy to ourselves or, you know, because we're told we're selfish. No, you can't do that because you're, you know, you've got to put everybody else first. You know, we're culturally told, put everybody else first and conform to what everybody else, you know, we've got to please everyone else but ourselves. And we've got to learn to please and love ourselves again, I think. You know, that's what really International Women's Day is, that we own ourselves.
We've got to get in. Just tell our listeners about some of the amazing work you do in the community. We could talk forever, but I want to celebrate also some of the amazing, empowering work you do in the community. Tell our listeners about some of the stuff you do.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, my background's in health and social care. I've got a background in neuroscience and a master's in corporate social responsibility. And, you know, I became a reluctant activist, actually. My journey of activism in HIV started in 2012, actually, as a peer support volunteer for Positively UK, ironically. Because I did that 10 years after being diagnosed, and I saw this kind of poster. And I thought, you know, I've got coaching and mental health background. And I thought, you know what? I'd love to do that. Mm-hmm. So, and you know what? The first client I had was this young African lady, you know, maybe in her early 30s or late 20s. And she had HIV for 6 years, Sue. And I just remember, and I'll never forget it. And I'd like to tell that story again because she was in tears when she first saw me in our first session. And she goes, Mina, am I ever going to get married? Am I ever going to have children? I said, yes, you will, you know. Mm-hmm. And I saw her over a year. And I just remember she rang me a year later to say, Mina, I'm marrying a guy and he's negative and he's, you know.
Oh, wow.
And then she rang me a year later and said, Mina, you know what? I'm having a baby. And do you know what? I think peer mentoring is really important. That somebody with a lived experience, you're able to hold that space for somebody to give them that hope, to say you're going to be okay, everything is going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really satisfying for me, and it was really empowering for me as well to feel that I had the wisdoms to believe, to help somebody believe in themselves, that they have that unlocked potential to be who they want to be and make their dreams come true for them, whatever that might look like for them. And that's like my journey of being an activist, really. And then I've been on TV, radio, you know, you probably know that in podcasts. I've done that. If you Google my name, you'll see me. And I've been an international speaker around HIV at conferences, you know, at Beaver, but also in Amsterdam, part of the Gilead. And I talked about mental health, HIV. And more recently, in the last 3 years, I've been a peer support coordinator with the Positive East. So that's where I work at.
Yes,
in East London, as you might know. I started off there to develop the stigma program that was funded by Fast Track Cities. I did that for a year, and now I'm a peer support coordinator, and really love it because I do that face-to-face work with people where, you know, and also I run workshops, and we've done a whole range of workshops around compassion, art programs, which I really enjoy doing because I've got background in mindfulness and mental health and peer mentoring as well. And I'm also part of the London HIV Clinical Forum as a patient rep for North East London, which I've been doing for 4.5 now. Mm-hmm. And I'm recently also become the Beaver British HIV Association, BDI, Equalities, Diversity, Inclusion.
Right.
Advice member there, which I'm really privileged to be part of, and we're very much at the early stages. Because I've got a background in health and social care, that's my kind of background. I've worked in strategic commissioning side background in terms of in Health Watch, so kind of just like, you know, being a critical voice for people's voices around healthcare, across health and social care. So that allowed me to be invited last year part of the Fast Track City GP Champions Delivery Group, which you might be aware of, Sue, which is London initiative, and that went so well because I also got background in social prescribing in primary care, in mental health. So they kind of headhunted me to be part of that, which I was really honoured to be part of. And that program, we're hoping to mainstream that, and it's gone back to Department of Health to kind of capacity build prime GPs. Because I've been through that my journey myself, as I think many women get diagnosed because they get misdiagnosed in their GP practices, where those bloods are not picked up appropriately. So the real journey, we're hoping that what will happen from that is that, every person will be tested for HIV in their clinics by their GPs, and then get support that they need. And there'll be some amazing work done around that. And I think the work that we've done is going to be showcased at the next Beaver conference. You know, one of the things I wanted to share with you was a workaround that's never been done before is work around HIV and compassion. Mm-hmm. We know compassion is a big work, is a big drive around self-kindness. And it comes from mindfulness as well. And we've done, it's called Compassionate Focused Therapy. So we build up a partnership with Michelle Crosston. Mm-hmm. I forgot his name. The other guy, forgot his name. I know his surname is Chris Irons, that's it. And he's a psychologist and pioneer mm-hmm. of compassion. And we've never done compassionate focused therapy with people with HIV. So we did some workshops last year and we're doing some this year. And we're actually being asked to do a presentation at Beaver this year, which is amazing. Wow. We're really excited.
Gosh,
that we're
doing I will see you. Are you? You're Beaver. You're in Brighton this year.
I'm hoping to be. Yes.
Yes. I will see you there. If you're there. The unfortunate thing is, we could carry on all evening. We are coming to the end of your interview. You have a special song you've requested. I would like you to tell us what it is and tell us why.
Well, you know, I'm an old school R&B girl from the 80s.
Ah.
I saw Maze live in 1983 showing me Age Now. And, you know, that song still makes me cry and touches me, gives me goosebumps. It's called We Are One. Because I think there's diversity in unity. It's called We Are One by Maze. So enjoy it, everyone, and feel the love.
Thank you so much for coming on the HIV Army. No doubt we'll be ringing you again to do part two. Thank you so much.
Lots of love. Bye.
Wow, another wonderful interview. Dare I say so myself, and what a gorgeous song. Just letting all of our women know that we have the Sunflower Clinic, which is based at the Lawson Unit in Brighton. It's for all our women. It's held alternate Fridays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. You can get health advice. You'll be able to see a HIV consultant, family plannings, and they do smear tests and all sorts of things. If you want any more information on that, just visit the website. It'll come straight up and give you some more information. Now, as a woman myself living with HIV, I'm now going into nearly 20 years, and I can't believe it's nearly 20 years, and I can't believe actually all the things I've done in that last 20 years. I've been very fortunate to have some incredibly strong women as allies and confidants and ambassadors and followers within my lifetime of living with HIV. Some of those women I'd like to give a shout out for. Some of those women are my best friends, my best friend Linda, Sarah, Suzanne, and my dear sister Jill. They've all always been here for me, you know, batting the drum, shouting my corner, defending my corner on many occasions. And I want to say a great thank you to them, as they are to me, allies and strong women. But one of the women I would like to see a special dedication to is my daughter, Danielle. Danielle has been an amazing woman. She struggled through many years of my diagnosis and struggled when I disclosed to her many, many years ago when she was only 14 years of age after I'd kept a secret from her. And one of those reasons I kept a secret because I wanted to protect her. I wanted to save her some of what was going on in my life at the time. And I always thought and think, you know, if I tell her earlier, if she's going to think different of me, is she going to get scared? And as a woman, and as women, we do that, don't we? We take care of our children in such a different way. We will protect them against anything. And that's what I thought I did. Hopefully, we will get my daughter on the show. She has said she's willing to come and do an interview, and that would be absolutely amazing. It'll be the very first time I've sat down in a room and talked about what has gone on in the past. I mean, she's amazing now. She's 27, 28. She's got, you know, she gave birth to my first grandson 22 months ago. And I want to do this shout out for her. So the song that I have chosen for International Women's Day, it's from a lady that is no longer with us. It's one of my icons, Whitney Houston. It's called I'm Every Woman, and I want all the women here and around the world to embrace all the women around them on the 8th of March, because we are all wonderful, we are all amazing, and we need to be celebrated. Thank you so much for joining us on the HIV Hour this week. We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.